we welcome you to a December edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 It's About at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and Tara Wellman on Twitter. It's that dead time of year where basically nothing has happened since, well, really nothing has happened since it feels like since the playoffs stopped. I don't, except for, I know you and Alex spent a whole lot of time on the Astros, and that's a chirp's worth listening to, but I don't know that we need to revisit that. For the Cardinals, boy, Tara, I think the only thing that I could think of that they've done is they added a few people to the 40-man, and that meant they got rid of Dominic Leone. And, well, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Dominic Leone, but I'm open to hearing them.
He's posting pictures of fancy cars on Instagram. So, I mean, I think he's going to be all right.
That's the Instagram beat is always covered by Tara very well. I did not know this.
Dominic Leone was an interesting character in the 2019 season for the Cardinals, because I feel like I kept forgetting that he was an option. And I think that's sort of telling about his tenure in St. Louis, right? There were injuries that kept him from really playing a major role. And, you know, then he was one of those guys that, man, he would come in and look like, oh, he's got it figured out. He's going to be a really important piece. And then all of a sudden, you know, he couldn't get anybody out again. So he came in as a guy that, you know, at one point there was this conversation of, wow, maybe he can be a back end of the bullpen kind of guy for this team. I know there were some pitching guys that really liked him and what he could bring to the table, and it just never really materialized, which is sort of the microcosm of the Cardinals and bullpen guys for the last several years. John Mozeliak would attest to that himself. So, you know, I have nothing really dramatic one way or the other to say about Dominic Leone. I hope that he's able to find some success somewhere else, but I certainly don't think that he was a key cog to the Cardinals sort of rebuilding a dominant bullpen for 2020.
Yeah. You know, I dug in for the exit interviews, which we'll be finishing up this week. If you haven't read the exit interviews, come for the promo code for Primo Cafecito's coffee, and then maybe stick around for whatever I wrote. But yeah, there was, I mean, he had some, you're right, he had some good appearances. You know, like five of his seven September ones were scoreless. I mean, he came in and could do the job, but boy, when he didn't, it was extremely ugly.
Ugly fast.
Yeah. You know, I looked at the line that stood out to me, and I was looking at that. It was two outs and runners in scoring position. The slash line was 526, 625, 1.211. I mean, that was, slugging was 1.211. The OPS was 1.836. I mean, with two outs and runners in scoring position, it's when you're oh yeah. I mean,
that's the thing. I mean, so often that final line for him, I feel like, almost looked worse than he pitched, because it was that one pitch in that one situation that ended up breaking the dam open. So, you know, I felt like even in a lot of those appearances where he ended up giving up 2, 3, 4, 5 runs, whatever it was so centered around like that one pitch or that one at bat. And so often it is, it's not right. Like this novel concept in baseball. Right. But for him, it felt like he could be so strong, much like Andrew Miller this year, right? Where he could be so great one batter, then to the next, it was like a totally different story. And he looked like a totally different competitor. So that seemed to me kind of just the eye test version of Dominic Leone this year. And, you know, then numbers like that, it's not that he was always giving up multiple runs, but when he did, it was, he gave up a hit in that sort of scenario where it really costs you. And then the numbers look ugly enough to reflect that.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's at least when they acquired Dominic Leone, they were getting a guy with options, with he was young enough to have, you know, there's possibilities there. So, I mean, it was a bullpen failure, but at least it wasn't a sign a guy for millions of dollars and then he's stuck on your roster kind of failure, which is typical.
I don't know what you're possibly referring to.
That's because there's so many to choose from. So, I mean, if you're going to go out and acquire a reliever, that's the kind of the way I would want them to do it, even though it didn't work out here for Leon. I'd much rather that. I'd rather them just grow their own. And they've done such a good job with the relievers that they've either, you know, found somewhere or drafted or whatever. They've done a good job there. And it does give them that flexibility. But if you feel like you need to get somebody, you know, get a guy with a couple of years, you know, a couple of years left on their options and things like that. And, you know, if nothing else, they're not a huge liability to the payroll when they're, you know, blowing up or when they're sitting in Memphis. So again, I can't fault them for what they did with Leon. You know, I don't know that, you know, it was one of the few times they got rid of an outfielder. So, you know, you can't fault them for that because Randall Grichuk here would just, you know, have us tearing our heart out even more for what's going on. So it was, you know, I think it was kind of a, it wasn't maybe the best trade, but I can't fault John Mozeliak too much for that one. And who knows? I mean, Leon could take a minor league deal and stay in the Cardinal organization, and we might not have seen the end of him.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about the success or failure of the trade. To me, it's one of those that is, it can't be measured in a direct comparison as far as, you know, who's had more success, right? Because it was the Cardinals trading from a position much like the one they're currently in, where they just have too many guys. Right. Like, you need bullpen help. You have 80,000 outfielders. But regardless of how the trade worked out in that direct comparison way of, was Dominic Leon a more successful Cardinal than Randall Grichuk would have been? I don't think that's a really fair way to compare that or to analyze that trade, rather, because it was in a similar sort of context, like trading Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly for Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt wasn't Paul Goldschmidt that we all expected him to be in large part, but Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver were not going to be difference makers in St. Louis because there just wasn't. So I think you have to weigh that into analyzing that trade. And also at the end of the day, you're going to try stuff and it's not all going to work. And, you know, we tend to be really, really critical of John Mozeliak and company when, you know, you sign a guy to a 5-year contract and he doesn't pitch more than like a third of a season or whatever. But this is not that kind of move to me. And look, I certainly think that there was plenty of value to Randall Grichuk, but perhaps not the same kind of value that a potential bullpen arm had to the Cardinals at that point. And that's not a knock on Randall Grichuk. It's just the reality of the landscape of the Cardinals organization at the time. And in many cases, the way that it still is, they're still in a position where they can trade from surplus as far as outfielders go and try to, you know, rebuild some of those pieces that maybe aren't as strong from there. So I said all that because I've heard a lot of commentary that is kind of, well, the Cardinals clearly lost this trade now because of Dominic Leon. And I'm not sure that's a really complete way of looking at it, just because of the rest, like I said, the rest of the landscape of the organization at the time.
And we completely complain when they don't make a move. It feels like you've got to at least give them credit for making a move in that situation. Yeah. You know, like you said, not everything's going to pan out. And Leon had, again, he wasn't a complete failure. He wasn't what we expected. We would have thought like to see, but you know, he definitely had strikeout potential. And you know, you're right. If their injuries don't happen, or if something happens just a little bit different here or there, maybe it's a different situation. But you know, I figure he's probably not done in baseball just yet. And we'll see if the Cardinals just got a bad couple of years from him, or he just wasn't that much to him. But that's pretty much the extent of the Cardinals for right now. So I want to talk some about an article that Tara wrote this week for Birds on the Black. talking about the contraction situation about our league baseball, as most of you know, that MLB has put out this idea of, as part of their negotiations with the MILB, to contract 42 teams, which is slightly insane, it feels like, to most everybody's opinion, except for those that are in the power of negotiating. But Terry, you got a chance to really talk to people involved in this. And so why don't you just kind of go over the story and what you came out of it?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned when you tweeted out the story, I do have some local connections to one of the teams that landed on this proposed contraction list. And I've spent the last 6 or 7 years in some fashion covering the Quad Cities River Bandits. So I'm not quite as unbiased as perhaps you should be in a scenario like this. But I did have the chance to talk to the owner of that team, who also happens to be the owner of two other teams on that list. So as far as someone who's immediately impacted by it, I don't think it gets a whole lot clearer than that. But when I had the chance to talk to Dave Heller, who is the owner of the Quad Cities River Bandits, the Billings Mustangs, and the Lowell Spinners, I started digging into this story like I do when I become obsessed with a thing and wanting to know as many details as I can and uncover some of the pieces of this puzzle that maybe aren't immediately obvious. And so I collected information on all 42 of these teams. And in talking to Dave Heller, in talking to two other team GMs or presidents, I've got another interview scheduled in the morning, so there will be more of these stories to come. The same thing rings true as what Dave Heller told me initially, and that is that these teams are really shocked by their inclusion on this list, and also shocked that this is the plan that Major League Baseball came up with, that this is what they think is for the good of the game, because there's a massive lack of transparency in how these teams ended up on the list. There's a massive lack of awareness of what just eliminating 42 teams arbitrarily will do to 42 separate communities. And really a lack of communication in kind of what the options are in the negotiation process. So, you know, all of them that I've talked to have said, of course, it's early in the negotiations. There's more to be done here. This isn't the final story. Meanwhile, the commissioner's office keeps basically saying, no, this is happening. So, you know, you've got people like Dave Heller who are looking at their organizations and the projects that they have undertaken. The River Bandits here in the Quad Cities have updated the field and the irrigation system, and they've put in a new video board, and they put in the brand new LED lights, and they put in solar panels to power the LED lights, and like they're making all of these changes, right? And somehow they're still on a list that seems to be focusing in on facilities as a primary piece of the equation as to why some of these teams need to be contracted. But there's some inconsistencies in that story as far as which teams ended up on the list versus the ones that didn't end up on the list and how their facilities compare. There's so much information in the story that I feel like there are so many layers that people just need to go read it, because it's so involved, and it was so shocking to me hearing some of these details. Things like Major League Baseball sent out a survey to all 30 MLB teams and basically asked them to rank their affiliates, but there was no criteria given for how those affiliates should be ranked or what sort of categorized them as good versus bad. One thing that's not in the story, but that I talked to Dave Heller about, is that those surveys were sent out while the Quad Cities River Bandits couldn't play at their stadium because it was surrounded by water in the worst flood on record in the city. So, like, their facilities, their value, if you will, was being graded by their major league affiliate while they were underwater. at no fault of their own. So it's just, you know, there's literally not financially. They're great. I mean, they've set until this year when they had like the first 6 weeks of their season taken away from them because of that flood. You know, they were setting attendance records and they were, you know, all these different things. So the story that I put out on those three teams talks a lot about what they have done and their long histories in affiliated baseball and how all of that would go away if Major League Baseball just eliminates them, but also on how much it would impact the communities. The Quad Cities River Bandits generate $600,000 of charitable giving every year that stays in the community. That would all go away. And there are so many people that count on that because they've been here for so long and done these things for so many years, that that will be really hard to replace. There are 200 plus seasonal employees, not to mention the dozen or more full-time employees at the stadium. And in small communities, that's a large amount of jobs that just go away. So there's more to it than just there wouldn't be professional baseball played at this stadium. There's so many layers. And in one of the other conversations that I had last week that hopefully I'll be writing about this coming week, there's more to that as well, right? Because in many cases, the city or the state is in some way funding those projects. And as criteria for funding those projects, there are things like, hey, we're going to give you this money so that you can remain an affiliated team and keep up with all of the mandates for facilities or whatever it is that we need to do that, because people like watching affiliated baseball more than they like watching independent baseball. It's just how it is. But if that affiliation goes away, then what happens to the money that funds the team that then would have to find a way to operate on its own? So there's so many layers as you peel it back, and there's so little communication coming to these MLB owners and presidents about how they ended up on this list. And that seems to be where the primary confusion is, because they're not being offered a way to fix it. They're just being told, no, you're done. And that's a lot. That's a lot to take in.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when I was reading your story and really thinking about, like you were talking about, how the Quad Cities had upgraded the lighting and put in the solar panels and all that stuff. I mean, even if it's not coming from grants or bonds or whatever that the government is putting together, if that's an organization that says, look, we're going to take a hit on this for the first year or two, but, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be in good shape. We'll have these paid off. We'll have this and all that. Well, then all of a sudden, 10 years from now isn't an option. Because this isn't a, you know, this isn't a phase out. This isn't a, you can improve, like you said. It's just, it's kind of a chopping block, you know, all or nothing, here we go. And, you know, and from what I gather, I mean, it's what's ended up in the air for next year, right? I mean, we're talking about teams that right now should be selling season tickets, should be marketing. And that's got to be tough when, you know, all these things are out there now where, you know, how do you go to a corporate sponsor and say, you know, you want to renew your sponsorship when they're like, you may not be here next year. What good is this for me?
Yeah. You know, one of the teams that I will have a story about here shortly is in the Pioneer League, which is a short season league. And essentially, they spent this entire last season rebranding because they moved to the short season. Like they're in Colorado Springs, and it's really hard to play baseball in April and May in Colorado Springs. So they transitioned to a short season team so they wouldn't lose those early games. They basically created a whole new business around the idea of incorporating this team into the fabric of that community. And now it might all go away. They're hosting the All-Star game in 2020, but they have no idea if they can plan on anything beyond that. So just as far as the business goes, it's a really, really messy situation all of a sudden. And you've got not just 42 teams, but you've got 42 communities who have no idea how to continue to work this part of their economy into their longer than 1 year plans, which most businesses mm-hmm. have. So it just, it gets so complicated on that level with the money that goes into it, the money that comes out of it, the people that it brings into the economy, the, you know, all of those things that a big business can do. But it also just, I mean, on a really small level, as far as, you know, the intimacy of it, look, you have the Colorado Springs, at least has a major league team in the state. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Park City, Utah. You have to go a long way to find baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a AAA team in Salt Lake City. But these little communities in Billings or in, you know, in Wyoming or in the kind of Mountain West region, there are two teams in Utah that would go away if this contraction plan goes through. I mean, those communities don't have professional baseball. And all of a sudden you're talking about not just eliminating the team. Like if it could just go away and people didn't know that it was there, like they could just forget that it existed. That's one thing, but you're taking it away from people and that's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth. So not only are you eliminating their access to baseball, you're also making them really mad at baseball in the process, mm-hmm. which is not a good way to keep existing fans, much less generate new ones, which seems to be a primary concern of Major League Baseball across the board right now.
Well, and then you get into the fact that, you know, not only could they not go see baseball in person, but they couldn't actually watch baseball because half of them are blacked out from any team that's, right. you know, within, you know, six mm-hmm. states or something of that nature. So, yeah, it's a ridiculous thing for baseball, for the idea that you're trying to grow this game. Because, yeah, I grew up, you know, we're an hour away, hour and a half probably back then, hour now, because the speed limits are faster, to Little Rock, which is a double A team, which is a double A Cardinal team at that time. It's now the Mariners now. But, you know, if it wasn't for that, it's 5+ hours to Kansas City, 6+ to St. Louis. And then that's just the drive. You're not talking about the, you know, significant financial outlay that's going to go to a major league team. Mm-hmm. whereas you could go to a minor league team for relatively cheap and take your whole family to that. And to take that away, to take that, you know, grassroots type of fandom away, because, you know, it's one thing to watch the big guys on TV, but, you know, right now there's a lot of different things going along for the entertainment dollar as baseball continues to talk about trying to gain that younger generation. You know, if they can only go to a major league team or a team that's 2-3 hours away from them, even if it is minor leagues, you know, that's, they're just as likely to, you know, find something else to do. And I don't know. I mean, baseball's always been short-sighted and baseball's always seemed to do the wrong thing for its marketing. But it's amazing to me that this plan is even exists, but then they, you know, publicize it. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, you know, it'd be one thing if it kind of leaked out, or, and I guess maybe some of it, but, you know, they've confirmed it. Hey, yeah, that's what we want to do. Why are you saying this? You know, stop talking.
Well, and there's, look, I mean, the people that I've talked to have shared this opinion, and I'll be honest, I obviously come at this story from a perspective of thinking this is a terrible idea. But for some level of journalistic integrity, I've tried to kind of take myself out of the equation when I'm talking to these owners and these presidents and these GMs. You'll see in the stories, hopefully I can, you know, present you information that isn't just me saying, hi, Major League Baseball, you're dumb. But that's that platform. This is a totally different thing. So let me just say, you know, there's such a disingenuous element to this coming from Major League Baseball, whether we're talking about facilities or we're talking about there are too many players and minor league players should make more money so we can't have so many players, and, you know, all of these things that keep coming out of the commissioner's office, mm-hmm. none of them hold up. So what is it really about? The only thing that makes sense is this idea that, okay, let's make the minor leagues better, right? if that's the ultimate goal, then that needs to be a conversation, not a mandate. And it doesn't happen by just eliminating 42 arbitrary teams when the very things that are given as reasons don't hold up for those teams. One of the teams on this list is the State College Spikes, who were a Cardinals affiliate for a number of years. And in one of the conversations I just had, they specifically called out that facility, because you cannot say that this is about poor quality facilities if they're on the list, because that facility, from a number of people that I've talked to, stands out as one of the best. So if it's not about that, then is it about minor league pay? Well, all of these teams that I've talked to have reiterated the same thing that we all know, and that is that Major League Baseball has plenty of money to pay these guys whatever they want to pay them. It has nothing to do with how many minor league teams there are or what their, you know, stadium qualities. Like, it has nothing to do with that. So that doesn't hold up. The travel within the leagues is something that I think is a conversation that could be had separately, because that the way some of these leagues have been realigned and some are better than others, that's something that they could discuss, that they could again realign or whatever. That's a legitimate thing that you could say, okay, if this isn't good, how do we make it better, right? But the lack of genuine communication about all of this just leads me to continue to ask the question, what is this about? At the end of the day, what is this about? Because it's not about the things that Major League Baseball is saying that it's about. And quite honestly, no one really knows, unless you can say, as with everything else, yeah, the bottom line is always money and wanting to maintain as much of it as you can, which would be easier to do if there weren't as many teams.
Yeah, if travel was an issue, the Mariners wouldn't have a team, and we wouldn't be looking at Portland as an expansion team. So, right. You're right.
Well, and to that, on that note, I couldn't cover everything in that one story, but there's more to come. But one of the things that Dave Heller said, I've asked all of these guys, okay, what do you make of the Dream League, right? Because that's what Major League Baseball says is the alternative. If you're one of these teams, you can be part of this new Dream League. And the problem is it's not even a half-baked philosophy. It's just like very, very raw in its conception. But as Dave Heller pointed out, okay, so you're going to take teams from all across the country that you contract from their affiliations and then make them all one giant league and then say that travel is the issue, when you're going to have teams in like Billings, Montana and Erie and, you know, North Carolina, and like you're going to have teams all across the country in one league when you say that travel is the problem. It just, their reasons don't hold up. And that's what I keep hearing over and over and over again from these owners and presidents and GMs, who are saying, look, we were sort of blindsided by our inclusion on this because none of this makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, well, and you know, and then it's, you know, let's add that travel and make you foot the bill a little bit more, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't. And I mean, again, facilities wrinkles a bit because, I mean, one, not everything has to be top notch, top of the line, especially at, you know, single A, you know, I think that's somewhat of an issue. I mean, you want good facilities. Don't get me wrong. I know that the Cardinals left Little Rock because Ray Winter Field at the time was, you know, getting close to 100 years old, and they felt like it needed to be updated. And eventually, a few years later, they built a new stadium in Little Rock. But, you know, I'm sure St. Louis people get a little get their feathers up a little bit when they start talking about facilities, because that was the way the Rams left, because, you know, they had to have that had to be in the top third of the facilities in the league, which I think that's, I guess there's some metrics on that, but it feels like really subjective to me. Like, oh yeah, that's not good enough. Well, how do you know who's making the call? I would understand it more. And I know if it was an attendance issue, if you were saying, okay, these teams, they're just not, there's nobody coming. And then we need to, you know, they're losing money. Nobody's showing up. if you made that argument, I think you'd have a better case. But like you said, one, there's really not any idea, but it really does seem to come down to feeling like a bit of a blackmail situation of you've got to spend more money to, you know, keep your facilities up. Well,
right. But here's the thing. They don't know what they need to spend more money on. So it's not only a moving target, mm-hmm. it's an invisible moving target, because they showed up on this list and have no idea what the new standards are. So every one of these teams I'm talking to has said, look, we're 100% in compliance with what the standards are according to the current agreement. And if there are new standards, how can you eliminate us from this process without giving us the chance to meet those new standards? Because we can't meet standards that we don't know about. And that's why the facilities argument doesn't hold up, because you can't fault a team for not hitting the target when it's an invisible moving target.
You shouldn't be able to fault a team. Let's put it that way. If you've got any shred of decency or fair play in you. However, this is Major League Baseball. So, it's a mess. And I really don't get it, honestly. I mean, like you said, it feels like, you know, your initial thing is this idea of, okay, now we can raise pay, but it didn't have to go this way. And this feels draconian even to that. You know, I mean, 42 teams is a lot of teams, you know? I mean, what are they doing? Just honoring Jackie Robinson in some weird way?
I'm not sure he'd be impressed.
Yeah, I don't figure, being that, you know, back when Jackie played, they had, what, B leagues and C leagues and, you know, well, many more leagues of minor league ball than they do today. So I don't know. It feels strange. And, you know, maybe it's an over-the-top negotiating standard and eventually, you know, they'll get something out of it and this will all go by the wayside. But it's hung around a little longer, and it makes me feel like this is one of those things that maybe they're going to stand for. And it really feels wrong if that's the case.
You know, it puts these teams in a really unfair position, because similar to the fact that minor league players won't talk about minor league mm-hmm. pay, all of a sudden you have these minor league teams that essentially have to make a choice between defending themselves and potentially making themselves even more of a target, or just sitting by and hoping that their minor league baseball representatives are better at negotiating than their major league counterparts and seeing what happens. So, you know, you've got this sort of wave of public opinion that minor league baseball teams feel like they have on their side. But you have the extreme imbalance in leverage that Major League Baseball has over them. So it puts these teams, it puts these communities in a situation that just really feels impossible. And, you know, the winter meetings are going to be really interesting when you get these guys all in the same room. And obviously there are emotionally charged opinions on either side, and maybe some less than thought out statements that have been made, particularly from one side. And you've got people whose entire lives depend on this decision, not like whether they live or die lives, but, you know, you've got people who have given their entire professional lives to this industry. And it could go away basically with the stroke of a pen. And to assume that they're not going to fight back, or to try to suggest that these minor league teams shouldn't speak out or defend themselves or whatever it might be, boy, it just makes an unfair situation even worse.
Yeah, it feels like it's opening baseball up to 42, if not more, lawsuits.
Oh, yeah, and that's 100% happening. I mean, because it's not just the players. It's not just the front office staff. You have literally cities and states that have contracts and legal agreements, mm-hmm. and you can't just break those because Major League Baseball decides they don't want you anymore. So it's going to get really, really messy if they insist on this being their first and only and best and final offer.
And baseball has always done tried to do a fairly good job of not getting Congress's attention. That antitrust loss, exemption that they have is a pretty good threat of Congress's to take that away. And they've done that a couple of times. And that's usually about the time things get settled. I think back in the strike days of, things of that nature, they tend to not want to get Congress's attention. And now, of course, and I know you've pointed this out too, these are the same people that voted for the minor league, keep minor leaguers from making money act, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, the official name.
Yeah. But yeah,
the subtitle at least.
Yeah. And now they're, these are people that, because these are their constituents. And, especially in some of these smaller states, when this is, like we say, the only baseball there is, that's going to get some people's attention. And I don't think that Rob Manfred should be looking for Congress to be watching over his sport. And so, it was nice to see that some of the representatives and senators did come out and say, hey, look, what are you doing here? Whether that'll matter or not, I don't know, but I know just reading baseball's history, anytime that Congress gets involved, it doesn't necessarily work out well for baseball. And, they try to avoid that. And so we'll see how that goes. But again, that's just more legal stuff. That's more lawsuits, and you're going to wind up spending a whole lot of money. Yeah. If you do that, because lawyers don't come cheap, especially when they're being hired by,
I mean, the reported numbers that a team would save, $600,000.
Yeah.
You're talking about a single player's salary. Mm-hmm. That's what they're fighting over. If this is about money, if it's about leverage, if it's about control, if it's about, I don't know. That's what I keep, we probably won't get answers about that, because Major League Baseball won't give them to anyone. But, mm-hmm. That's the kind of money that we're talking about, not millions, not tens of millions. We're talking about one player salary a year, which, again, if you have done the numbers, it comes out to about what it would take to pay minor leaguers more money. So one major league salary. So, it doesn't seem to hold up so far. And that seems to be the resounding theme. And you've got 42 communities that are, at least in most cases, prepared to fight back on that.
It's going to be very interesting to watch, especially this off season and into next year and however long this may take. But, it does feel like we're just kind of hitting the top of the tip of the iceberg here. And it may be a kind of a messy thing, but it's good to know you have more posts coming, and everybody could check Birds on the Black and follow Tara on Twitter when they drop, because like I said, the first one was quite involved and quite detailed. And if you haven't read it, you should go over and read it. But I look forward to seeing the rest of them. You got any idea when they'll be coming?
Hopefully in the next couple of days, I'll have one of them out. And then I've got two other interviews to work with in the days after that. So I don't want to make any promises on when they'll all be there, just because,
yeah,
life happens. But
it does do that, yes. So.
Hopefully one or two in this next week, and then we'll go from there.
I think Cardinals Gifts wants us to say that everybody should check back at least every hour on the hour to see if Tara's written a post. I think that's what.
Or just to read the last one again, because there's a lot of information there. So just read it slowly and then come back and read it again.
That's right. Don't get distracted by Kyle's prospect rankings. I mean, ignore that stuff.
Just take a break. I mean, read it and then come back and read the contraction piece again and share it with your friends. And
that's right.
There you go.
That's right. So, all right. Well, again, that's the biggest stuff that's going on. There's really not much else happening. Tara and I, we'll just play it by ear a little bit. We might be back next week before the winter meetings, but boy, sometimes I look at that and like, why bother? Because the Cardinals aren't going to do anything at the winter meetings. So, but we'll see. we'll see. Maybe something happens this week that makes us think they will. If we're not back next week, it might be January before we're back. So you just have to stay subscribed and keep an eye out for when we might be here. We're just going to kind of drop in here and there at times. But with the holidays and lack of news, it's a good time to take a little bit of a break. So until next time, whenever that is, I'm Daniel and that's Tara. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.